Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, J.W. Buck. In this podcast, The Cultural Christ, we will explore the intersection between the Christian faith and cultural identity. We hold interviews with followers of Jesus to discuss the way our faith impacts our culture and how our culture impacts faith. Now for part two of this interview. Let's fast forward the next 10, 15 years from college. And listen, for those of you guys that don't know Sandra, leader, preacher, incredible executive, coach, all the things, like author, all the things we haven't even talked about. So you have always gone about, in my opinion, as somebody who I know some, you're creating your spaces, you're finding your friendships. And so what does it look like for cultural identity development for you, having those realizations coming out of college for the next 10, 15 years of your life? Was it, what did church look like? What did friendship look like for you as you were developing further in your cultural identity?
It took me a long time to return to myself. You know, let's call those years returning to yourself. It took me a long time to return to myself. And I'm really thankful that I was able to do that in a time that wasn't as polarized as we're finding ourselves now. So I'll oftentimes talk to friends who were along the journey with me at that time, who are also women of color, about how we were discovering our ethnic identity and our voice and our power in the time, in the post-racial times, in the times that people would have said we're post-racial. You know, Obama got elected right after that. So see, we have a Black president, all that kind of stuff, like multiracial churches in the early 2000s. We were a part of all that. And I think it was a time where people were encouraging, like, oh, you should encourage looking for diverse friendships. And it wasn't as polarizing. Now we say that, and it's like either people think, it's almost like you have two strong reactions to that. Like diversity isn't enough. It's only about justice. Let's not talk about diversity. Or diversity is like, you know, Marxism. And why are we talking about that? So that I was able to discover those things in a very different time than we find ourselves in. So I want to point that out because I think it was different for me because the political and social landscape was different when I was doing this in the early 2000s. But I think for me, it just meant like leaning into the beauty of difference. Like I was working primarily with Asian American students on a college campus. They were coming from international students from like Malaysia and Indonesia and all these different Southeast Asian and Asian countries. There were Asian Americans, second, third gen. There were all kinds of folks there, South Asians. And I was a Latina leading a primarily Asian American chapter. And so I learned about my own culture actually through difference. Not through difference of like me compared to a white person, but me and my values in contrast to the Korean American church, in contrast to Korean American Christianity or South Asian Christianity, Indian Pentecostal churches. You know, like I was finding that there were some things that we shared in our values and understood about Christ and God and faith. And then there were some things that even though they weren't white, we didn't have shared cultural values or understanding. And so I think that place created for me a curiosity. It developed curiosity. It developed humility. It developed kind of courage and bravery to lean in to difference because it wasn't as contentious or loaded as having a friendship where there's a power differential, like white man to Latino woman, you know? So I think I was able to just go, okay, what does it mean to be me? And then the other thing was my stupid supervisor was like, what does it mean for you to be a Latina campus minister? And I was like, what does that matter? And this is what I said. What does that matter? Like, I'm just a Christian. Why do you have to say I'm a Latina Christian? I don't understand. Like, what does being Latina have anything to do with this? I'm just a Christian. So if that tells, so for those of you guys that know me, if you can believe I made those statements, just so you know, I made those statements, you know, 1999, 2001, 2000, I'm sure I was making those statements. Why are you bothering me about my Latinidad? Why can't you just see that I'm a good leader? I'm not a good Latina leader. I'm a good leader, you know? And I felt kind of boxed in by someone naming my ethnicity. Now, at the time, the campus ministry I was working for was doing a lot of work in this area. I would say they were about 20 years, 30 years ahead of most people. So they were really publishing books and leaning into that and having conferences and dialogues. But I was like, why are we talking about race and ethnicity? I'll just let that sink in for you guys. I said that. It really helped me to begin that journey of curiosity that I had talked about. Like, oh, okay, like a Korean American male is going to communicate differently than I do. They're going to value different things. They're going to see the scriptures differently. They're going to have been discipled and formed in their faith in ways that are going to maybe be in contrast to what I might have to offer. And so how do I have dialogues and create spaces where students can talk about difference together? So because I was forced into that, and then I had to like take this class on like developing Asian American leaders. And I was like, what is this class about? And then I was like, oh, I understand now. And then fast forward 5 years later, I was at an event and I had a pretty senior white male turn to me and say like, why do we have a class on developing Asian American leaders? We don't have a class on developing WASP leaders. And I was like, yes, you do. It's everything else you do here. And so I think for me, that journey of coming back to myself was actually provoked by a mentor and by a community that valued that.
And for those who haven't been on that journey and are at a juncture where they sense and think that culture matters more than they've paid attention to, but they still are like, well, why do we say we're a white Christian or an Asian Christian or a second generation Guatemalan Christian, Colombia? Help those who are listening understand why that's so essential to following Jesus, that we do acknowledge and understand our cultural upbringing, background, and those intersections.
When we think about culture, I think particularly in the Western context, I think we're thinking about language, dress, food, celebrations, things that kind of are visible and very, very overt. But the nature of what is cultural is actually so deep and so foundational and fundamental that it's talking about like, not just like I speak Spanish, but how do I understand family, community, equity, fairness, justice, leadership? How do I communicate? So there are some things that you could come from the same racial group, but have two different cultures. You could come from the same culture, but have two different racial groups. And one thing I think in the West, particularly because we are sometimes unable to have a nuanced conversation about race and culture, that we miss something. So if I say, oh, I'm Latina, then you're like, oh, you must like wearing red, which my hair is red, if you don't all know, you must like wearing red lipstick and big earrings. And you must like, you know, so we have these caricatures of, oh, you must speak Spanish, you know, you must salsa dance. But me being Latina has nothing to do with those things. Those may be externally visible expressions, but it has to do with how my mother raised me to parent. I mean, it's very things you can't see. And so I think that's why people don't think it's important, because they're not thinking about, for example, the topic of leadership. I saw that someone had posted on their blog a list of books on leadership. And every single one of them was written by a white male. And I was like, well, you know, experts say that leadership is like 90%. The way that we lead is like 90% cultural. It's like about our social location. So if the only books on leadership, about Christian leadership, that I ever read are written by white men, then I'm going to learn to become a white male Christian leader. I'm going to address conflict directly. I'm going to wait for someone to rise up and self-select as a leader instead of like looking for them, you know, because they have self-initiative and they just, you know, they rise up and all that trash that we talk about. I mean, most cultures don't do that in their leadership. No one would ever say like, I want to be a leader. And so I believe that we're not looking for the right things. And I think to go back to what I was saying earlier, in America, because of our history and because of our anti-Blackness, and because of our history with Native Americans, the lens in which we think about difference is almost exclusively racial. Our racial experiences and our cultural values are two different things. They intersect, but they're two different things. So you can be a Black Costa Rican and have an experience of being Black in America, but not identify at all with when your African-American brothers and sisters are talking about their history here because and their values and their foods, because your foods and history are actually different than theirs. And so where we can create spaces for us to talk about how our racialized experiences and our cultural values, where both of those shape and form our understanding of scripture and faith, what they allow us to see or what we miss because we don't have those experiences. I think that's where my personal passion is, because in my community, people are Latinos and they're Black, and some of them are also undocumented. And so they have all these different factors that are impacting their experiences. And I think people would much rather say, well, let's just keep it simple. Let's do this in English. Let's just use this commentary written by an authority that we trust, which is almost exclusively a white male. And let's sing these five CCM songs that we can find that all came from the same church. Let's just do that as faith formation. And if we have a Tagalog speaking church, let's translate that book into Tagalog and get that, because that would meet the need, because language is what we're looking at and not actual values.
You talked about the journey that you were on was in a time that was less polarized. Maybe another way we can say there was a lot less at stake in terms of how heightened the culture is around so many of these issues. For you, if I'm articulating correctly, a part of your journey coming out of those white spaces, having been formed in the beauty of this fusion of Argentine and Colombian culture and like the local Catholic parish, you had mentors and disciplers as you're doing campus ministry, and in community, you were finding your way back to yourself. What advice do you have for those of us who are in the middle of this identity formation now in the 2000s, in the opening verses of the 21st century, which are like not easy to listen to and deal with for any of us who are where you were back then, 1999, 2000? What's some advice and tips that you have for Christians that are wrestling with that now? What do they do? Where do they go? What community are they looking for? What passages are they exploring? What churches should they be at? Help us.
I think that being around people who are not like us is like holding a mirror up to your face. I believe that our experiences in churches led by people who are not like us, in small groups or kind of like affinity friend groups with people who are not like us. For those of you that are parents, part of my journey has been just like being a parent in a school with a lot of parents who don't have the same choices and freedoms that I have socioeconomically or because of documentation. So I'm always learning about my own location and my own culture, because culture is not only ethnic culture, but it's also like our social location. So I'm an upper middle class white Latina who's like overeducated, basically. Like most people in the world don't have, you know, are not always looking for degrees. I think that makes me miss a lot, because I can only surround myself with people like me. So the encouragement I can give all of us, including myself, is continue to be around people who are not like you. I say this all the time, especially to leaders of color who have come out of college movements. Like, it's great that you have diverse friends, but if everyone you're around has a master's degree or more, you are missing a piece of the picture. And you're going to create systems that you think are helpful for people in our community, but you have no relationship. So you would have no idea what's a cultural value in our neighborhood and what would work for our neighborhood. So I think that idea of like, be around people who are different than you and enjoy it, like it, you know, like ask God to show you what you're missing and how that contributes to your understanding of faith. If any of us have ever had the opportunity to travel around the world, we know this. When we congregate, we can go to a different country and step into a church, and our posture when we step into that church, because it's a different country, is like, man, how cool. Let me receive something different. What do I have to learn? But in our own country, when we step into a church where there's a difference, we're like, well, I wouldn't do it that way. Well, they triggered me with that. Well, I wouldn't say it that way. So just having a curiosity about difference allows us to see ourselves better, leading as a pastor and a staff where most people did not have a master's of divinity or were formally educated in that way, I was constantly reminded that when I said things like best practice, that meant white people do. So that's how I would learn. I would be like, oh yes, best practice. Who sets that best practice? It was probably a white guy. It probably was a series of people that did research and organizations led by white people. And they came up with this best practice that works in suburban spaces where people have access, wealth, and choices. Okay, so you're right. That's not a best practice for children's ministry here. But I learned because I was in a place where, so I would say being around people who are different. I think number two, just resources. There are so many podcasts, books, Instagram accounts. So maybe you need to fast from voices who are like you, including those of us that are people of color. Maybe we need to like open up our perspectives by following other folks, like learning from someone else, not to diminish our culture or not to diminish our struggle or not to diminish our voice, but as a way of enhancing our connection to others in the struggle for collective flourishing, you know, like enhance it by taking space and or giving space to someone else's voice. I didn't have those resources in 2001. I'm going to tell you, the books weren't written back then. You had to really dig to find them. And they were like the ones that we're still reading today because they were so profound and powerful. And then I would say confession is probably a part of that journey. Like my spiritual director asked me when I came back from Argentina in 2000. Yeah, I think Divided by Faith had just been published. So I think it was 2000. We had a spiritual direction appointment. And she said, what did you learn about yourself from your 3 weeks in Argentina? And I looked at her and I said, I'm white. And I started crying. And I think I cried for like a good 10 minutes because even though my father's cultural space and place was Latino, his ethnic heritage was German and Dutch. I was like, oh, so all this stuff I'm doing around racial justice, like this is a part of my legacy. Like the Dutch have completely colonized Africa. That's a part of my legacy. Those are... and so I felt so profoundly ashamed and embarrassed. And I had to learn to like own that as a part of my story. That's why my voice got heard. We moved out from the city to the suburbs and I grew up in an affluent suburban space. So I learned the ways of the empire. And so I used those to get ahead. So there are things that I was holding, privileges that I was holding and power I was holding that I was not confessing or admitting that I had. And the minute I was able to do that, it like released me to a new kind of ministry. And I would say that now, as Latinos and Latinas are having conversations about anti-Blackness in the Latino community, I'm not like defensive, like, what? This is like, we have racism in our community? No, because I already came to grips with the fact that there is racism and anti-Blackness all across the Americas because of our history. And that I have to be careful to be attentive to where I have taken that in and where I ignore my own privilege in places. So yes, I grew up in a wealthy suburb. Like we got the heck out of the city as soon as we could. As soon as my parents could afford to, they bought us a small house in a great school district, you know, where I could grow up around people that would teach me to get ahead. And I learned the ways of the empire and I have privilege. And so how do I use that in order to make a difference in the world? But that was a part of my journey. It's like knowing all the aspects of yourself. And I think that confession is a part of that.
And it really connects into your first point because that experience was prompted, of course, through God, through the use of spending time in an environment outside of America. For you, Argentina, where your father was from. And I just want to highlight what we hear from Sandra, which is diverse community, not for the sake of being around people who are not like you, but for the sake of learning self-reflection, learning how to love and care for others. And so thanks so much for sharing that. Before I let you go, I do want you to share about the organization that you started, Chasing Justice, and some of your work that you want people to know about.
Yeah. So Chasing Justice came about because a group of us were together trying to figure out what does it look like to follow Jesus and then speak truth to power, follow Jesus and do the work of justice, not just compassion and relief, but actually change systems and structures. And it felt like our activism worlds were like over on one side and our faith communities were over on the other side. And so we wanted to create a space where we could, and really primarily young adults could, come together and ask questions about how do you live a lifestyle of faith and justice? How do you use your voice? How do you use your power and privilege? How do you think about where you shop and what you buy and why, where you live, those kinds of things? And so how do you address the crazy things that are happening in the world with clarity and with perspective? So Chasing Justice is a community where people can come together and learn about living a lifestyle of faith and justice. It's primarily aimed at people of color, young adults of color, but in that we mean like it's led by people of color. So if you look at our authors, you look at our team, our creators, anyone who's leading is a person of color, and we invite the rest of the community to follow. But we really truly believe that the people that have experienced injustice have the answers to how we would live in a more just world.
Everybody check out Chasing Justice. Hop on Instagram and follow them. It's incredible work. Sandra, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. If you want more content, you can go to jwbuck.org or follow me on Instagram, handles jwbuck. If you have any questions about culture, cultural identity, or faith, feel free to send me a message. Hope you'll join us next week.